Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime is so delicious, so unbelievable, no word exists to describe it. It's better than mind-blowing, it's mouth-blowing. Bright, citrusy, and spicy, this newest flavor from Captain Morgan is a balanced blend of sweetness with delicious notes of lime and slightly spicy chili flavor that is great for an escape outdoors with your crew or your next hangout. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime is best enjoyed as an ice-cold shot or as a chili lime twist on a classic as a spicy daiquiri. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime, a touch of sweet, a kick of heat. Please drink responsibly. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime, premium Caribbean rum with natural flavors, 35% alcohol by volume, Captain Morgan Rum Co., New York, New York.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
If scary movies give you dread, keep you up late night in bed, here's a podcast that will help you ease your mind. We'll explain the plot real nicely, then we'll talk about what's frightening so you never have to have a spooky time. It's Ruined.
Hello, welcome to Ruined. I'm Hallie.
And I'm Allison.
This is a podcast where we ruin a horror movie just for you.
Just for each and every one of you. Allie, how are you?
I'm honestly okay. Realize that, and perhaps some of our listeners will understand, as someone with ADHD, I feel like I spend my life constantly catastrophizing.
Mm-hmm.
And so when it is a catastrophe, my brain is sort of like, almost like, I knew it. Okay.
It's kind of ready. You've been prepping for this.
I've been preparing for this. Now, it doesn't know what to do about it, but I feel like I have entered a phase of five stages of grief. I've entered acceptance. That this is simply what was going to, it's America. This is what was going to happen. We didn't deal with anything. And now this morning, we're recording this on Wednesday, February 19th. And Doge is like in real time changing the numbers to prove it's like, oh, we saved $8 billion. And then like somebody found the document that says 8 million. Oh, okay. So money isn't real anymore. Well, what are we going to do about it? Other than see ourselves, see the fraudulent, the house of cards that is America, that is society, and then accept it. How you doing, Allison?
Okay. I just got back from Aruba. We didn't record last week because I had my last minute trip with my parents to...
Tell us about this. In case you're a new listener, Allison goes on vacation, a really nice vacation with her parents every year. How did it go?
It was really good. Mm-hmm. We go and sit near each other and read books on the beach or at the pool and then hang out at dinner, basically. I read a great book that I would love to recommend. Sloane Crosley, she's like a essayist. She has two novels too.
Oh yes, yeah.
I was told There'd Be Cake was her like big debut. Her latest book is really, really great. It's called Grief Is for People. And it's a memoir that's like very focused on one specific loss in her life. But it's very funny. It's very New York. It's very like, it's very thoughtful. And I just really enjoyed, I was like, oh, I like reading this on the beach. So that was it. I read a book and played bingo in the pool every day. And now I'm back and New York is like 18 degrees.
Do you and your parents ever fight on vacation, or is this sort of just we accept that this is who we are on vacation? Does that make sense?
I think we all, like, for the most part, want to be doing the same things. Like, no one, like, there's not one of us who's like, I really want to go explore the town. Like, that's like not, but like, everybody just wants to be sitting, reading, and then eventually start drinking some beers in the pool.
Mm-hmm.
If there's an activity that's in the pool, like bingo, we'll play that. And then otherwise we just want to go out to dinner and then go to sleep. So it is like, we all want the same things out of it. So there's no tension there. Any tension just comes from just like the 40 plus years of parent-child dynamic that we've been living with.
Absolutely.
But nothing that wouldn't happen at home. And nothing that like is like ever big.
Yeah.
Because they are like, I mean, they're, my parents like are, they're boomer liberals, so like, you know, they're 70% there on stuff, and that 30% I always just kind of try and be like, well, think about it a little bit more, and then they're like, you're right.
Yeah,
so we don't get into political stuff, and we don't, you know, they've accepted that I'm never having kids. I probably won't get married, but like, that's kind of off the table as a discussion topic. So now the whole thing is just my mom talking about who's going to die and when. And that's
right.
Much,
yeah. Well, you got to prepare, you know,
a lot of planning.
Yes. As women in middle age, that is sort of the next phase is seeing our parents out. I feel like
end of life plans is like her number one.
Well, that's good. I'm glad. That sounds like a nice vacation. I feel like I'm such a bad traveler. And as soon as my sleep gets messed up, I'm terrible. I also feel like I am someone where I need to do activities on vacation or I wig out. But I think that's just the ADHD. And
yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. The book I'm reading is Michel Foucault's Volume 1, an Introduction of the History of Sexuality, which is online if you just want to read the PDF. Because I was like, boy, I guess I just don't like, I need more philosophical underpinnings of, as a queer person, what we're going to do about this. Like what happens as they slowly start to, as they begin to continue to undermine our rights. And in the fourth, it's Beautiful Skylight Books here in Los Angeles, and on the back of the fourth book in the History of Sexuality, I was reading the back of it, and it said basically the origin of the totalitarian self-surveillance state is the Christian practice of confession. So it wasn't saying they're related or they're similar or parallel. They're saying that that is what incites that activity in society. And I said, well, that one makes a lot of sense. And two, so what do we do about it? So I'm going back to read. Luckily, the first volume's a much slimmer volume than the fourth one.
I remember reading it in a class in college. And unfortunately, like most things from college, it hasn't, like, specifics are not stuck with me. And we did just read volume one, which is, like, more the introduction and not, like, but I remember enjoying it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, really, whatever, not that everyone has to immediately start doing a deep dive to sexuality and sort of the philosophical pinnings. That being said, that is the project that's going on. You know, it is Project on Private, is to specifically to control your sexuality, in our case, control it as women. And so it is good for us to sort of dive into, one, why, and two, what are we going to do about it? And you know what? If I come to any of those conclusions, I will report them on the pod.
I was going to say, if you get anywhere, please bring them to the pod and share, because I think everyone is like, so now what?
And
everything.
And it's almost like, I feel like I've reached a point where it's like, oh, right, now what is, it's everything that everyone's been telling us, right? Like, it is everything. Yeah. So you just got to figure out what is your thing to try to figure out how to help, right? So like, oh, I see now they got me. And how did they get me? You know, and I think for me, it's like, I feel like that about my sexuality, like coming out later, it's like, well, they really got me, you know, and they being society, but also the Catholic Church. You know, so it's like, how do I go back and understand how I got so that I can try to explain to other people, here's how they're getting you, here's to avoid being got, you know, that kind of thing. So
don't get got.
And speaking of a woman coming into her own, this is the first movie of March, which is our new theme. And the theme of this month is good for her.
Good for her.
Good for her.
I will say very quickly, because of when it is now, I just watched the SNL 50th, and boy, seeing Mike Myers reprise Linda Richmond, even just for like 45 seconds, was so satisfying.
It was great to see him.
It was like butter.
Yeah. I wish we had gotten Stefan. I wish that someone tweeted that it's like, of all the sketches they should have had that would have made sense in the format, it would have been, what's up with that? The Kenan Thompson.
Oh, yeah.
Where like he never gets to Lindsay Buckingham and like he has celebrity guests and everyone come out. That would have been really
fun. That would have been right. Yeah. I don't know. The whole thing was like 3.5 hours long. So I'm just like, I get it.
It was 3 hours long. I would say about 30 solid minutes mixed in there, which is all you really can expect from SNL these days.
Yeah, but that's their ratio in general. But Linda Richmond, good for her.
Good for her. I'd love to see more Mike Myers, if you're listening. Mike, we'd love to see more of you. I don't know why
Maybe you want to be in a horror movie. Just pitching.
He'd be excellent. The movie we're doing this week is 2010's Black Swan, directed by Darren Aronofsky and written by Mark Heyman, John McLaughlin, and Andres Hines, based on a story by Andres Hines. And, of course, starring Natalie Portman as our lead, where she met her now ex-husband, Benjamin. And I know
Millepied.
Right. It's obviously spelled millipede. And I don't want to – I know it's not pronounced that way. But yes, he's also great in this, and you totally understand how they must have fallen in love making this, as yes. they are constantly dancing Swan Lake throughout the film. Allison, we always like to have Allison watch the trailer. Allison, what are your thoughts about the trailer for Black Swan?
Well, I've seen this movie, but with almost, there's only really like two scenes that I remember at all. One of them is the fingernail.
Oh, yeah.
Stuff that really, which I don't remember if that's like in the trailer.
A lot of cuticle stuff, a lot of cuticle finger work, skin tearing.
Finger, skin, toes. And like feet. Yep. Like it's just like, you know, the true body horror that does come with being a ballerina.
Yes.
And then the other thing I remember from it is like she's at some point in the dark walking down like a hallway that construction scaffolding mm-hmm. has made on the street. Or like at least there's like some coverage that she's walking through, and it is just like, as a New Yorker who has to walk through those construction hallways all the time, mm-hmm. It is such a scary, genuine like fear to have. And then when I went and saw this movie, I saw it with my, when I was living on the Upper West Side with my then roommate, and we saw it down at Lincoln Square, which is right across from Lincoln Center, mm-hmm. where the ballet happens, and we saw it at like 10 p.m. on a Monday, and like walked home in the deserted streets of the Upper West Side in the dark, just like we were like speed walking, just like, we could do this, it's gonna be fine, it's gonna be fine, it's gonna be fine, it's gonna be fine, nobody's gonna kill us, it's fine. Like, even though that's not even like technically what the movie's about, it was just so unsettling. But that's the only stuff I remember from it.
So. Yeah, he makes a lot of great use of New York. I feel like there's so many darkened subway windows, so many turns around a darkened corner, a lot of uses of a trash chute in an apartment building, which I really liked. We always like to take a baseline scary as well. Allison, how scary do you find the concept of wanting to be perfect?
I mean, terrifying in that I understood it in youth, and as I get older, you know, you realize that not only can you not be, but that it's also not desirable to be perfect. It's not a nice life. I just watched the Brian Johnson documentary, that guy who's trying to live forever.
Oh my God. Wait, what's it? Do you remember what it's called?
I think it's called Don't Die.
Oh my God.
And it's like definitely more skewed. Like he like was involved in production in a way where it's like, ugh, there's not a lot of skepticism in it. And I was kind of looking for it to be more like
analytical,
interrogating what he's up to, what he's up to. Yeah. But again, it's like, that's not a life. Like to take 130 pills every day and like spend all that, like that's like, that's like also the same as, you know, like the pursuit of perfection in dance and arts and in sports. I certainly like experienced it, and it's a life ruiner. So very scary.
Yeah. And I think like he is very similar to Elon Musk and a lot of these like tech guys, where he even has said, I think he said this week, he was in some interview, he's like, I believe that we're going to be the first generation not to die. Like he's so insane, afraid of his own mortality. But what's sad about it is like, just like Elon Musk, like this guy has at least one kid, and it's like, well, you know,
he has one who talks to him.
Right. Yeah. Like,
and several who don't.
Like, humanity passes on its legacy, and you live forever through your children or through your legacy. Obviously, we're showbiz gals. Our lives are about our art, and that is something that we both decided and both really enjoy. And also, like, that's how I think about it. Like, I am making these things that I hope people enjoy, and then that like lives on in that way. This guy, first of all, he's gray. If he's a
shade. The skin color is so unhealthy seeming.
Instead of being like, oh, I'm going to raise my child and be a good parent and like connect with them and that you will be my living legacy, he's going to be like, I'm going to drink pig's blood and measure my dick measurements and I'll never die. And it's like, to not have any self-awareness to be able to look in from the outside and be like, what am I doing? I'm actually wasting my entire life.
Wasting your entire life.
It's so dark.
Stealing plasma from your child. You're truly taking his youth.
Right. And it's only a matter of time until that kid stops talking to him, too. Like, I'm assuming he's the youngest one, just like Elon Musk is out here making new babies. As his kids get old enough to realize he's a crazy person, he's just making new ones. Yes. You know, he's got to have next one on tap because the babies don't know. And then once you like turn 18, you're like, what the hell was going on here?
Yeah.
Anyways, I also follow his daughter on TikTok, and she's constantly talking shit about him. I hope she's well. I hope they're all okay. I hope these people's kids are okay, because it's like, it's sick. And also, I guess they're just surrounded by other sick people.
Yes.
Who are like, that, like, yes, we'll all live forever. It's like, that yes. sucks.
Or even the like cynical version of like, I'm going to attach myself to this maniac because yes. it gives me access to wealth and power.
Yeah.
And I'll entertain his insane kind of delusion.
Yes.
So I can get something that I want.
Right. It doesn't. Yeah, exactly.
Bad.
Like it's doesn't. All bad. It doesn't matter whether or not you believe what he's saying. What matters is right. you're willing to act like you do to gain benefit, which is kind of, yes. I feel like I've talked about this before. Like Tucker Carlson gave this interview last year where he was like, I was attacked by a demon. And I think we kind of get in the weeds of like, well, does he really think that? It doesn't matter.
It doesn't
listen
matter.
To how, look at what he's doing, listen to what he's saying. His internal beliefs, maybe that is a cynical power grab. I believe it is. It doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
He's using that.
The end result's the same.
Exactly. Anyways, yeah, it's not going to be perfect. And no one learns that, I think, more. Well, I don't know if she does yeah. learn it. I was going to say, we learned it watching Nina's journey. She might come to a different conclusion at the end about what all happened. And then before we get started, would you like to guess the twist in Black Swan?
Guess the twist.
Insane how little I remember of this film that I can't even, like, I barely even remember the general plot, let alone, like, if there was a twist to it. I'm going to guess that she finally get what she wants as the lead ballerina, but then she dies.
Mm-hmm. And how does she die, Allison?
She gets stabbed. I'm going to say an accident of kind of her own making, where it's like, oh no, like I did all this stuff for myself and it ends up being my own demise.
My hubris, my overweening pride has brought me low once again.
Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime is so delicious, so unbelievable, no word exists to describe it. It's better than mind-blowing, it's mouth-blowing. Bright, citrusy, and spicy, this newest flavor from Captain Morgan is a balanced blend of sweetness with delicious notes of lime and slightly spicy chili flavor that is great for an escape outdoors with your crew or your next hangout. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime is best enjoyed as an ice-cold shot or as a chili lime twist on a classic as a spicy daiquiri. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime, a touch of sweet, a kick of heat. Please drink responsibly. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime, premium Caribbean rum with natural flavors, 35% alcohol by volume, Captain Morgan Rum Co., New York, New York.
Let us begin ruining Black Swan. We open on our protagonist, Nina Sayers, dancing the role of the Swan Queen in Swan Lake. And we see her sit down on stage. She's stunning. And also, I realize a lot of this movie is me trying to describe ballet. And I'm like, oh, she's dancing all around. Ooh, she's good. She's doing a good job.
Twirling.
I have no idea. I have absolutely no idea. No. I remember when this came out, I think I was blogging for Vulture already. I used to blog for Vulture all the time.
Yeah.
And there was like, the whole press tour of like, oh, Natalie Portman studied for months to dance ballet. And sort of Mila Kunis was also in this. And I'll be honest, I cannot tell you what is good ballet dancing. I think it all looks nice.
Oh, no. It all looks better than anything I could even venture to try. Right. So
she's nailing it. She's out there. She's just killing them. We see her. She sits down in the spotlight in her all-white swan costume. She has sort of a feathered headdress on. And a dark figure approaches, a male dancer in the costume of a black swan. And it's sort of stylized ballet. So it's sort of like a feathered sweater. You know, it's sort of, it's very 2010, like, modern, you know. He circles her. He's a predator. They dance around one another. She sort of flaps her arms as she dances like wings. And suddenly the man spins and his sweater becomes a cloak of dark black feathers. And his face becomes sort of a demonic swan visage with feathers coming out of his hair. And he spins her around and around, and we see her tiptoe away into the light, into the spotlight, flapping her arms like wings, angelic. Nina opens her eyes in bed as her mother, Erica, enters. And we immediately know, again, Darren Aronofsky, a great director, you immediately know what this character is dealing with and who she is, because she's obviously in her 20s. Her room is the room of a 12-year-old girl.
Yes.
It is pastel pink. Dozens of stuffed animals. She's wearing a nightie, like a silk nightie with like pink bows on it. She's clearly in a level of arrested development, which I also think is accurate to some level about dance and ballet in particular. Yes. You're supposed to keep a very girlish, childlike body in your thinness.
Mm-hmm. And even just like the styling of ballet, it's pink silks, it's bows, it's tutus, it's tights, and you know, it just is already like kind of infantilized just yes. by what it is.
Yes, the nature of it. And we see her stretch as she tells her mom, "I had the strangest dream last night. I was dancing the White Swan. It was different choreography, though. It was more like the Bolshoi's." And we see in one of their, they have like a classic six on the Upper West Side. And so one room is just like her practice studio, basically. This huge ceiling-length triptych mirror that she could practice ballet moves in front of while her mom is preparing her ballerina breakfast, which, of course, is a half a grapefruit and a boiled egg. And Nina looks in and she goes, "Look how pink. So pretty." And around her mother, she speaks like a little girl. She's like a little girl at work as well.
Yeah.
But clearly, as soon as her mother's there, like, she has to be a little girl.
Turn it on.
Yeah, that's the only role her mother is comfortable with in her having, basically. But when she's like that, her mother is like her friend. She's very like, they're joking around. And Nina tells her mom, you know, "He promised to feature me more this season." And her mom says, "Well, you've been there long enough and you're the most dedicated dancer, my sweet girl." Then her mother says, "Up," like you say to a toddler, and has Nina lift her arms to like put on a sweater. And again, is talking to her like not even like she's like a 12-year-old, but like a baby. Mm-hmm. And Nina puts her hands up, and Erica sees along Nina's shoulder blade sort of a series of scratches. And we see her mother's face react. She says, "What is that?" Nina looks, but she says, "It's nothing." Of course, this is, the reaction is not that this is a new thing. The reaction is, okay, are you...
this again.
Yes. Yeah. And we're going to have a lot of skin-related things. I think we think these are behaviors that Nina has, you know, had throughout her life. Her mom says, "Do you want me to, are you sure you don't want me to come down with you to the, I don't know what you call it, the actual dance studio. So I've called it the dancery in honor of Mary Kay Blige."
Yeah, got up all in it.
And and they are going to get it percolating, her and Mila Kunis, later on in the film. We see her take the subway down. And also, as someone who lived in New York, I'm like, oh, the subway, Lincoln Center. Oh, what a day. Meanwhile, she's like already starting to lose her mind. And we see her staring in the dark subway window. A great effect. So it's sort of her outline like a totally obscured face, a shadow version of herself. And we hear these. She, of course, is constantly hearing sounds as we are, where it's like we hear the flutter of wings. And she turns and she sees a woman that from behind looks like her, by which I mean a brunette with a tight ass ballerina bun.
Right.
And there's a lot of moments of like, is that her? Is that her double? Is that another very thin white woman? And we see the other step out of the subway and go up the stairs while Nina continues on to Lincoln Center. She walks in, and when she does, she sees these two huge posters for the ballet company and its current production, and its current leading lady, Beth McIntyre, played by the incredible Winona Ryder, who I loved in this movie.
Yes, that's right.
And as Nina and the other ladies are getting, the other soloists are getting ready, we hear these two other girls, Veronica and Galina. They're like, "I cannot believe that Beth is back." And I'm like, "Oh, of course she's back." And Veronica says, "Can't she take a hint? The company's broke. Nobody comes to see her anymore." And Galina's like, "Okay, but to be fair, nobody sees ballet anymore, period." Veronica says, "No, if he used someone new, we'd get someone in the seats. If it was someone who wasn't approaching menopause." And they all laugh. Again, the youthful fertility tap on stage. Nina is not hearing this. Obviously, Nina has idolized Beth, you know, sort of like the role, the person you want to be. She says, "You know, it's sad. Beth was a really beautiful dancer." And the girl's like, "Oh, my God, shut up, you goody two shoes." Suddenly, the woman from the train bursts in. It's Lily, played by Mila Kunis, who is sort of the more like uncontrolled, sexy, in a very natural way version of Nina. Like, Nina is so tight, so controlled, so perfect. And then Lily's just like this naturally effervescent person that she's late. And everyone's like, "Oh, Lily, you're late." It's like that. I'm sure if you're a ballerina, you cannot do that. But she can because she just has it. Right. She's a star. She's like, "Oh, my God, I missed my stop. I had to hoof it from 79th Street. She comes in and slams her bag down. And Nina's staring at her like her eyes about to pop out of her head. We see Nina customize her ballet shoes. And I saw something recently, you know, how they just sort of like take them apart.
Yeah. You have to like burn them and like. Score them up.
Yeah, score the bottom so there you have friction and sort of customize them to your feet. And I want to say that they said that a ballet company can go through 7,000. Yeah, the New York Ballet goes through about 7,000 pairs of pointe shoes each year. We have to design the shoes better. That's insane.
Why? why can't just from the beginning it be made custom and in the way that it like, I get that there's some part of like, this is the traditional shoe, but like, I don't know. We're not using the helmets that they used to use in the NFL at the beginning. Like let's evolve this.
And here's the thing, Allison, it's because you can only wear them a couple times. And some people, you burn through a pair of shoes in one day. So you literally are doing this over and over again.
That's insane.
Hundreds of times per dancer per year. I don't know. I guess you do have the block, so I guess it has to be specially made. But it seems like the material could be switched out. I'm sure if you're a dancer and know anything about this, yeah, I'm sure they've tried.
Right. We're talking out of our ass here of like,
as we
fix it, do better.
Do.
Yes.
And they do look beautiful, but we see Nina sort of customizing her shoes. And then during practice, they wear the actual little ballet slippers, which I always associate with Amy Winehouse, RIP, wearing their ballet slippers out. I wore ballet slippers, I mean, probably only a couple times, but on the streets of New York, I wore them out because it was the fashion of the time.
It was. Just rip up your heels.
They go into the rehearsal space and they're all practicing at the bar until the director arrives, Thomas Leroy. Played by Victor Kessel, or Kessel, I apologize, Victor.
Oh, yeah.
Vincent Kessel. And he, of course, is like the Silver Fox, older gentleman who has total control over this fleet of young men and women. Everyone gets in place, they're doing pliés, and Nina's watching Tomas again, like sort of circle them, watching them. And as he goes, he's touching a couple of the women on the shoulder. So, of course, she's type like, please touch me on the shoulder.
Yes.
He starts to talk to them about Swan Lake, which is their next production that he's casting for. He says,
we all know the story. Virginal girl, pure and sweet, trapped in the body of a swan. She desires freedom, but only true love can break the spell.
Her wish is nearly granted in the form of a prince, but before he can declare his love, her lustful twin, the black swan, tricks him and seduces him. Allison, he taps the woman in front of Nina, but not Nina.
No, Nina.
And you know Nina, Natalie Portman, she's all eyeball.
Yes.
She's like barely holding back tears. He didn't tap me. Finally, Tomas turns them and says, the white swan leaps off a cliff, killing herself, and in death finds freedom. New season, new production, new Swan Lake, choreographed by me, stripped down, bare, raw. And my new production needs a swan queen. But which of you can embody both swans, both white and black?
Two people, not one person being both.
One person being both. And the person who does both will have to embody both of these dichotomous, you know, sort of personas. So,
yes,
they will be dancing both. Obviously, we've seen Nina. She's very white swan. She's very controlled, virginal. She will have to become the black swan in order to perform both of the roles, right?
Yes.
He says, all the soloists I tapped, go to your scheduled rehearsals this afternoon. Everyone else, meet me at the principal studio, which I love. It's just the cuntiest way to do that.
It's so good.
It's the opposite. Of course, Nina is shaking, so excited. Veronica and Galena are smirking at each other. And we also see that Lily has remained untapped. So we're also going to see her later. Nina's constantly isolated. Like, all the other girls are, like, constantly in each other's faces in a way that is more women's sports. Like, so yes, they are getting it together, but they're also in the green room, like, talking shit, calling each other a bitch.
Yeah, locker room bot. Yeah.
Yeah, and in a way that, like, they're cultivating female friendships. She's always alone. She's always down the hallway. And also, everyone else, like, is an adult, so it's, like, they have, like, sort of, they have tattoos, they have makeup on, they're wearing all black, and she's wearing these sort of baby pink and, like, heather gray little shrugs.
Yes.
Again, like, infantilizing. Allison, she hears a scream and shattering glass, and through a crack in a dressing room door, she sees Beth trashing her dressing room. Obviously, Beth presumed that she would be the Swan Queen and must have just found out that ain't happened.
Yes. And wish we could see him tell her that.
As she storms out, she snarls, what? At Nina. And when Nina sneaks into the dressing room to sort of survey the damage, she pockets one of Beth's lipsticks to take with her.
Nina.
Later, we see her dance the solo in the smaller primary studio where, like, the collection of women are. Tomas and the other dancers look on. She's crushing it. And again, that's the thing about ballet. It all looks good. I think she's doing a great job.
Like, unless you fall down and it's clear you fell down, I will have no idea if it is good or bad. It will just be impressive to me nonetheless.
Tomas stops her and he practically whispers and he's like, if I was casting only the White Swan, you'd have it. But we aren't. Maestro, play Odile's coda. Show me your Black Swan, Nina. Unfortunately, Nina don't have it. Nina is, again, the White Swan is gorgeous. She has to be seductive, or at least powerful, or straight. Like, bring some other darker energy in. She's, like, wigging out. She's breathing heavy. She knows that she's eating shit. And Tomas started to, like, yell instructions like, not so control, Nina. Seduce us. Not just the court, the audience, the entire world. Attack it. Attack it. And she's screaming, attack it. She's, like, whipping around. And, of course, as she whips around, she's distracted by something coming in the door. It's Lily arriving late. And when she sees Lily, her leg twists and she falls out of her spin. Very disappointing, Nina. I'm sorry. Tomas greets Lily and says, this is Lily. She just got it from San Francisco to cover Rebecca's old spot. Lily's please start warming up. And Lily says, oh, I'm good. I already did. So I think, again, she's coming at this from a bit like, oh,
she's loose.
I'm ready to go. I'm loose. I'm good.
I'm good.
I'm loosed up.
Let's get started.
And so Tomas very intrigued. Again, it's like, oh, you're already pushing back on me. You already have your own, like, sort of perspective and your own person. Nina, of course, is shaped to obey. And when Nina says, do you want me to go again? Tomas says, I've seen enough, Nina. Unfortunately, as is the case with so many sports and activities that focus on the body, Nina obviously has an eating disorder.
Yes.
And in the bathroom, we hear her vomit. And this is obviously like a stress response. Like, this is how she calms herself down after this disappointing audition. She heads home on the train. And I would say, like, this kind of intense system of, like, rigid feminine behavior is what causes that. And it's sort of like the body scrutiny provokes this. And it will kill us all.
Of course.
She's walking home off the subway. Her phone rings. It's her mom. She ignores it. Her mom's constantly calling and constantly trying to know what's going on. And that's when we get the scene of her walking down the block under the construction scaffolding. And we see a woman in black as she walks. Suddenly Nina sees it's her. But when she whips around, and as they come parallel, she whips around, it's just another dark-haired woman who's very startled. So, again, Nina's already sort of starting to have these apparitions, these doppelgangers appear to her. Like, other women, who am I to other women? Am I this other woman? She gets home. Her mom is immediately up her ass. It's like, you were late. So I called Susie in the office. Oh, my God, an audition. He just springs this on you. How did it go? And Nina says, it was fine. But then she bursts into tears.
Aww.
And her mother rushes over to comfort her. Because, again, like, if Nina is the child, I think her mother can be the mother. You know, so it's like, oh, as long as you're sad and a little girl, I can be there.
This dynamic continues. Yeah.
In the evening, they both score new pairs of ballet shoes for Nina the next day. And her mom calls Susie in the office and complains, like, he can't expect these girls to just break it down like Beth McIntyre. It's completely unrealistic. He has to train them. And we see again in front of the full-length mirror, Nina practicing her turns again and again. Finally, she stops and she pulls off her shoe and winces. And we see her, one of her big toenails has split open.
Ugh.
And she has to bandage it together.
The nail and the toe and finger stuff in this movie is, like, worse than, like, some of the extreme violence we've seen in other films. Like, it's so, because it's so small, it's so awful.
And I also think it's not treated as horror because it's just part of the job. Like, right. I think that it's, like, your feet do become fucked up and you just kind of take that as your body is being modified by ballet, right?
Yes.
And there's something very scary about that.
Yeah, seeing that, like, when I was rowing, like, your hands would callus over almost entirely in certain parts because, like, of just, like, feathering the oar and stuff. And it was just, like, disgusting to an outsider, but to me, I was like, no, this is the right way. This is how you do it. It is just kind of like, no, it's not.
Yeah.
Your hands shouldn't be like that.
Later, she's going to bed, and her mom helps her clean off the toenail. And Nina's she's fuming about Lily interrupting her audition. She's like, if she hadn't come in here, I wouldn't have fallen like that. And her mom's like, it's fine. Don't worry about it. You know, like, you'll probably just be a part of the core. You know, I mean, wherever you're going to be placed, you're going to shine. She says, no, I'm going to talk to him tomorrow. Tell him I finished it. That I want to show him that I finished it. And her mom says, you don't have to lie. It won't convince him either way. So it's like her mother doesn't actually believe in her. Her mother believes in her success to the point where her mother can still have control of her.
Yes. A star is not something that she can have the same power dynamic with.
Exactly. But she reassures her, it's all right. Whatever role he'll put you in, you'll shine. And then she cranks Nina's music box and it plays Swan Lake. In the morning, Nina heads down to the subway and she puts on Beth's lipstick in the subway mirror. Her first venturing into, you know, sort of a woman's seduction.
Yes.
And she waits for Choma with her hair down and a lip on. And I thought Natalie Portman did a great job with this because it's like she's so obviously not has never done this before. So she's showing up to try to like show him this seductive black swan side of her. But it's so uncomfortable and she's just radiating that. He invites her into his office. She says, I finished the coda. And he says, I don't care about your technique. I've told you that your technique is perfect. I really need your artist's soul. And I'm sorry, I've already chosen Veronica for the role. He opens the door and she says, okay. And her voice gets like smaller and smaller, more childlike as they talk. And she goes to the door and he shuts and he says, oh, so you're just going to leave? You aren't going to try to change my mind? Clearly you thought you could coming in here all dressed up like this. She's sort of caught out like, oh, you got me. He says, look, you're the ideal white swan. You're technically flawless, but I'm not buying this. Okay, when you speak, you sound like a child. I want you to lose yourself. And you never do. You never lose yourself in the dance. And Nina whispers, of the many times she says this in the movie, she says, I want to be perfect. And he says, perfection is also about letting go. It's about transcendence. She says, I think I do have that. And he steps into her arms, basically, and he kisses her. And she kisses him back, and they have this like intense moment, and then she bites his lip. And he's shocked. He's like, oh, like he's sort of stunned. Yeah. It comes out of nowhere, and she's so flustered, she runs out. Later, Veronica notices Nina staring at her as they all kind of wait outside, waiting for the roles to be posted. And Veronica's like, why the fuck are you staring at me? Nina doesn't run over when they post it like everyone else does, but she sees Veronica walk over and she says, congratulations. And Nina packs up her stuff, not even bothering to look. And Veronica runs back over and she's like, why did you say that? Is that coming to some kind of sick joke? Fuck you, bitch. And of course, Nina runs over and she sees that she has been cast as the Swan Queen. We see Lily sort of nod at her appreciatively. And Nina runs to the bathroom stall to call her mom, who is thrilled. And she says, he picked me, mommy. And of course, her mother's freaking out. She's like, I love you. That's so incredible. But when Nina opens the bathroom stall, she sees, which is now a very famous meme. She sees scrawled on the bathroom mirror in lipstick, the word whore.
Yes.
At home, we already start to get moments of like her already getting a little too big for her britches. Like she's becoming an adult woman because we see her pause before opening the door. And I think it's that pause of like, I don't want to deal with my insane mother. Oh, well, I live with her.
Yep.
We also see she checks in on Erica's bedroom and Erica, who used to be a dancer and then sort of like put all of that passion into Nina's career.
Yes.
And then she's a painter. Allison, what is she painting?
Just ballerinas,
painting after painting of Nina's face.
Oh no, that's not good.
Yeah, just dozens of Ninas. We see Nina shower and she notices the scratches on her shoulder are getting worse. They're bleeding, and around the scratches it looks like goose flesh, like goosebumps are raised the skin. But again, she's gonna ignore it. She's used to her body falling apart. Her toes are falling off. You know, what are you gonna do about it? And we see her mom comes in and Nina wedges the hamper against the door so her mother doesn't come in. And I think that's the thing is like there's no physical boundaries in the house because her mother treats her, again, like a toddler. Like you take care of a child versus an adult woman. So I think we're to think like her mother's always just barging in to like examine her body and like take care of her like a baby.
Yeah.
She finds her mother in the kitchen with this beautiful pink cake. It's stunning. Like pink sparkling sugar, little ballerinas on it. And her mom's cutting her a slice to celebrate. Nina says, please, it's not such a big slice. Her mom says, it's a celebration. And Nina says, please, my stomach is still in knots from getting it. And her mom picks up the cake and says, then it's garbage. Of course, again, like if it's, you can't say no to me or else it's all meaningless. Ugh. And her mom goes to throw the cake in the garbage. And Nina stops her and again, placates her by being a little girl. And her mom scoops up some frosting and puts it in Nina's mouth like you would feed a baby off your fingers.
Yes.
Yeah. And they laugh and Nina smiles. And again, because she's staying the little girl, her mother can be her mother. The next day, we see Nina performing the White Swan, crushing it. And Tomas says, I knew you'd be incredible at this, of course, but the real work is the transformation in the second act. So I'll give you more of that bite that I saw yesterday. And all the other girls go, he leaves her with one of the ballet mistresses who sort of starts coaching her into the character. She steps out to get water and then sees the rest of the company practicing in the larger practice room, sort of the dance corps. And she sees Lily dancing and her hair is undone. And she's joyful and like flowy. And Tomas comes in behind Nina and says, see, watch how she moves. It's imprecise, but it's effortless. She's not faking it.
Okay.
Nina gets moved into the main green room where Beth's stuff still is. We haven't seen Beth, but she's sharing the sort of the nicer green room. And Susie from the main office shows her in and says that bouquet there is from Mr. Leroy. People are already starting to make assumptions about how she got this role.
Yes.
Also, Nina spots like a bunch of Beth's stuff, and she may or may not start maybe using it, and one might say even stealing some of it.
No.
But it's just because she wants to be like her, you know?
Yes, yes. Yes, imitation, the sincerest form of flattery or insanity, seemingly.
Allison, it's time for the big gala. It's a new season, a new production, so they have all the donors, all the rich people. It's very like, this is where the Joker would attack and Batman would have to swoop in.
Yes, yes.
And so he's going to debut her as the lead of Swan Lake. You know, everyone looks fabulous. Nina looks incredible. He says, be sure to smile. We need the cash, so don't be afraid to, you know, go and warm up to the donors. Of course, she's panicking and sweating. Yeah. And she's not capable of that. You know that when you cast her. She's not a personable person. She's a weirdo. But he leads her up these sort of winding staircase, and he clinks his glass and everyone turns and falls silent. He says, I just want to thank everyone so much. And I want to thank my leading lady, Beth McIntyre. And we see Winona's in the crowd looking fabulous. Everyone's clapping. Mm. And he reveals that Beth is retiring at the end of the season. This will be her last production. And he says to her, thank you so much for all of your incredible work, my little princess. And at that point, we see Beth's face drop and she storms out. Obviously, they too had something personal between them. And now, because she's over 40, she's got to hit the fucking
skids. Get out of here, you old bag.
Meanwhile, Nina is panicking and she keeps, as you said, like peeling at her cuticles to the point where they're bleeding, right? Again, she does not get out much. And finally, Tomas turns and he introduces her and says, as one dud drops off the edge of the menopausal cliff, another star rises, the star of my new Swan Lake. The incredible Nina Sayers, and everyone applauds. Yay. But she hears kind of a mean little laugh and she looks into the crowd and it's Lily, and Lily sees her, and Lily was not laughing at her. She was just not paying attention. It was like flirting with some guy.
Yes.
And she's like, oh, sorry. In the bathroom, we see Nina run in for a moment and she starts picking up her cuticle, and she gets the scene you're talking about where she peels essentially the top part of her finger off, the first two joints in a strip.
Oh my God. It's so visceral. It's so bad.
Allison, she gasps and runs under the water, but when she looks again, the skin is fine. Allison, if you were Nina here, what would you do?
What would you do?
I mean, like, the obvious thing as an outsider who's not like deep in all of these difficult dynamics and life, like, would be like, I'm gonna quit. I'm gonna move out of my mom's house. I'm gonna enroll in just some early stages of talk therapy and psychoanalysis and kind of get myself right and get a healthy relationship with dance and my body. But obviously she can't do any of those things. I guess, oh God, like, who do you even go, like, she has no one.
She has no friends.
Is, like, that's the thing, is like, there's no one person to be like, I'm losing it. Please help me. Like, it's the options are like women who hate you and a man who is absolutely taking advantage of you in a variety of ways. And then your maniac mother who is living through you and controlling you. So like, I'd like run away.
Yeah. But it's also true. It's like, this is not a profession. Like, either you're in or you're out. Right. Like,
yeah.
we work in a profession where, like, worst comes to worst, there are a lot of different writing jobs. There's a lot of, like, different connections. It's like, if you can't do the dance, you can't do the dance.
You can't do the dance. And, like, you're on borrowed time anyway. Yes, like, absolutely. It is, like, you only have, you know, as we see with Beth, like, a few years of being the star before you're, you know, sent off to live in the woods.
Yeah, sent to the farm upstate.
I guess, like, just try and get a grip and power through and be a star.
Well, I guess that's the other thing. Is like, that is what happens, is she just starts to double down. It's like, I don't have anything else. I do need to be perfect because I don't. And that's the thing, is like, she doesn't have connection. So what she has to have is perfection. Like, if she had connection, it would be easier for her to understand, like, oh, I think I'm something's starting to slip here.
Something's happening. Yeah.
But she's so isolated. She doesn't have that.
Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime is so delicious, so unbelievable, no word exists to describe it. It's better than mind-blowing, it's mouth-blowing. Bright, citrusy, and spicy, this newest flavor from Captain Morgan is a balanced blend of sweetness with delicious notes of lime and slightly spicy chili flavor that is great for an escape outdoors with your crew or your next hangout. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime is best enjoyed as an ice-cold shot or as a chili lime twist on a classic as a spicy daiquiri. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime, a touch of sweet, a kick of heat. Please drink responsibly. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime, premium Caribbean rum with natural flavors, 35% alcohol by volume, Captain Morgan Rum Co., New York, New York.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
But puncturing that isolation is a knock at the door, and it is Lily. And Lily, again, is like very warm, big personality, and it's like, oh my God, congratulations. I know I just got here, but like, that's so exciting. And she goes to pee, and as she's talking to Nina, she reaches up under her dress and pulls off her panties and puts them in her purse. And that's some black swan behavior if I've ever seen it.
Yeah, that is the ultimate black swan move.
She says, are you freaking out? I know I would be. And Nina's like, no, I think it's going to be great. I just wanted to be perfect. And Lily said, and Nina turns to leave. She's like, oh, stay and keep me company. Like, let's hang out. But Nina excuses herself. Again, like, oh, this person's trying to be her friend. She can't do it.
She can't even do it.
It's too late.
Mila Kunis is perfect casting for
this role.
She's
so good. I love her. Yeah.
She's so beautiful. She is so, like, just, like, you're, like, instantly, like, in every role, you're, like, she's cool. Like, she's cooler than me. In real life, I don't endorse her. It seems like she might be a bad person, but... as an actress, she is the correct person.
Right. She's someone that if someone like that was like, oh, do you want to hang out? You're like, yeah, absolutely. Like, to see what's what. Yeah.
Yeah.
Afterwards, she and Toma start to leave the gala. And he says, well, let's go to my place for a drink before you go home. I'd love to talk to you about the role. Which, of course, like, we kind of knew was happening, right? A little bit of sexy quid pro quo. He ducks back inside to talk to a donor before we leave. And Nina examines this statue with wings for arms at Lincoln Center. She turns and she's confronted by Beth, who is drunk. Her eye makeup is a mess. She's obviously been sobbing and she is enraged. Yes. And Beth says,
what'd you do to get this role? He always said you were such a frigid little girl. What did you do to make him change his mind? Did you suck his cock?
Winona Ryder is so good. She's in this for about 10 minutes, 5 minutes maybe, and she's insane the entire time. And Nina replies, not all of us have to. And Beth gasps, and it's like, okay, well, that is the right answer. Incredible.
Yeah.
But then, of course, Beth, because she's drunk, she's like, you little whore, and starts screaming at her. Toma runs out to sort of calm things down. Yeah. And Beth says, I'm coming by later. I have something for you, a token of my appreciation. Nina goes home with Toma to his place. It's exactly what you think his place is. It's all black and white, a black grand piano with like white carpet. Insane. And they're having a drink. And he says, look, I can see your talent. I don't want there to be any boundaries between us. It's like, oh, don't worry. Her mother took a good care of that. She doesn't have any boundaries whatsoever.
There are no boundaries.
Yeah. He says, well, have you ever had a boyfriend? She says, well, I've dated a few guys, but like it was nothing serious. And he says, well, are you a virgin? And she says, no. But I think it's like a, well, technically no, but like essentially yes. Like,
yes.
Probably
right.
She had some high, like college boyfriend she had sex with, but like she is not
40
dating,
seconds.
Right?
Yeah, right.
And he says, I have a homework assignment for you. I want you to go home and to prepare for the role. I want you to touch yourself and sort of let yourself go. And Nina's like, okay, I guess I can do that. Like, she's not, it's not sexy to her. She's just panicking.
No.
And just when you think, like, oh, he's going to kiss her, or she thinks what's going on, he stands up, he says, the doorman will find a cab for you, and kicks her out. When she gets home, her mom is immediately all over her and is, like, physically helping her undress, right? Like, she's an adult woman. She looks great. She has a beautiful gown on. And her mom's, like, undressing her like she's a child.
Yeah.
And her mom sees that Nina's wearing a pair of diamond earrings. And she says, where are those from? But Nina says, they're fake. That, you know, they're not from anyone. Her mom says, well, you could have fooled me. But her mom sort of starts to undo her dress in the back. Nina tries to stop her, but her mom sees the scratches on her shoulder are getting worse. Her mom freaks out. And in this moment, we find out, like, Nina has, you know, and they don't use this word, but Nina's obviously had, like, a habit of self-harming, which also makes sense. Yes. If she has an eating disorder. Like, they all are, you know, behaviors that fit together.
Connected, yeah.
She strips off her dress like she's a toddler. Again, like, she's staying there in her underwear, no bra, and makes her sit on the edge of the toilet while her mom clips her fingernails.
Okay.
And her mom's like, it's the role, isn't it? I thought we were past this disgusting behavior, Nina. And again, it's like, these behaviors are behaviors of a deeply unhappy woman who is being stifled into the role of a child. Yes. But there's no room to talk about that with anybody. And she's certainly not going to therapy. Instead, she's putting it into the role of the white and black swan. In the morning, however, Nina wakes up in her pink frilly little girl bed. And she remembers, of course, what Tomas suggested, and she starts masturbating. And, you know, she's getting into it. She rolls over, so she's face down, and she starts, like, humping her hand, really getting into it. And as she does, she turns and she sees that her mom has fallen asleep in the armchair next to her bed.
Oh,
and she, of course, like, freaks out and, like, pulls the comforter over in a panic. The next day, she practices the role with the rest of the company. So now everyone's there. It's not just Tomas and the dance mistresses and, like, the men. It's everybody. It's the whole core. So Lily and all the ladies. And again, she's hesitant. She's childish. Like, she, you know, you could see her straining against, like, what the role is. Allison, someone runs in sobbing and said, Beth's been in an accident. She's in the hospital.
No, Beth.
Later, Tomas and Nina sit near the fountain outside Lincoln Center, and he says, yeah, she walked into the street and got hit by a car, and I think she may have done it on purpose. Everything that Beth does comes from this dark impulse. Like, she's just so impulsive, but that's also what made her so compelling to watch. Perfect, even. But Nina's really perturbed. She's like, wait a minute, was that right after we saw her? Like, she yelled at me and called me a whore, and then walked into traffic?
Yeah.
And Tomas says, that's not your responsibility. You didn't do anything wrong. This is your moment. Do not shy away from it, Nina. Nina goes to visit Beth in the hospital, I think feeling bad. And before she enters the room, we see her take off the quote-unquote fake diamond earrings. Obviously, they're earrings that she stole from Beth's dressing room. But she pockets them so Beth doesn't see it. When she walks in, Beth is asleep. And Nina sort of puts the bouquet she brought on a table. Her face is battered and bruised, but even worse, we see Nina lift the sheet, and we see Beth's leg is broken all the way down, huge jagged scar down her entire right leg, and she has, like, a metal brace where it's, like, bolted into the bone. She's never dancing again. She's not even finishing the current season of this the ballet.
This is it.
It's over. In her dressing room, though, she lays out all of her belongings because Beth ain't coming back. So we see her take out, you know, Beth stole a lipstick. She stole a perfume, stole a pack of cigarettes from Beth, and then a nail file. That night, Nina takes out the garbage and, like, a bunch of people, which, again, is a very New York thing. Like, people just put garbage near the garbage chute but not throw them away.
Oh, no. I have constant arguments in my building about this.
And there's a piece of wood. It's, like, 2 foot long, like a round, almost like a cylindrical piece of wood. And she takes it into her room. And she sort of hears her mother sobbing. And her mother is sobbing as she paints Nina over and over again. And Nina at least has a wherewithal being like, I'm not getting involved. And she goes into her room. And she uses the piece of wood to block the door. So, like, she realizes that she can wedge the door closed with this piece of wood. So that's how intrusive her mother is, right?
She has to physically...
Yeah, barricade her door. Her mom calls and says, Nina, are you ready for me? And Nina takes a piece of wood again and leaps into bed like a child for her mother to come in and sort of tuck her in, essentially. During practice, Nina dances with David, played by Natalie Portman's hubby-to-be. And they're dancing. It's beautiful. But Tomas shouting, you look like a dead corpse, woman. Let go. And she is, she's like locking up, and she gets a massage from a physical therapist, and she's like, the therapist is pushing in her and under her ribs and says, your diaphragm is contracted, so I think, can you feel it? And she's trying to like push her to like let go physically. Later, Nina's dancing with David again, and Tomas is annoyed, and he says, David, tell me, would you fuck that girl? No, no one would. It's like, all right, okay.
Okay, and that's like a little beyond where we need to be.
A little much, Tomas. And he starts yelling at her. He says, Nina, your dancing is just as frigid as you. And the lights go out. And basically, it is like they're past a certain time, and so the lights go out. They have to shout for somebody to go turn them back on. They get lights turned back on, and he dismisses everyone except for Nina. So it's him. It's Tomas and Nina alone. He says, I will dance the prince. And he grabs her, and they start dancing, and he starts seducing her through dance. And he says, let it go. Let go. And again, the music becomes tense, and Nina starts to panic. He says, no, just feel my touch and respond to it. And she does. Like, they do have this moment. Like, there is this romance and seduction.
She can loosen up. Yeah.
And she, like, pushes him away, and he grabs her, and they start kissing, and there's passion. He says, open your mouth. And sort of, he grabs her breast, and then he reaches under her skirt. And just as she's sort of starting to let go and she gasps, he stops and he says, that was me seducing you when it should be the other way around. Ballet! And he storms out, leaving Nina sobbing alone in the studio. And she sort of starts to put herself together, grabs her tutu, and a figure appears at the door. And she looks, and for a moment, it looks like she's looking at herself. But when the woman steps inside, it is, of course, Lily.
Mm-hmm.
And Lily's about to light up a cigarette. Nina says, you can't smoke in here. And Lily says, well, I won't tell if you won't. And she gives Nina a cigarette, and they both start smoking. And obviously, Nina's been sobbing, you know?
Yeah.
Lily's like, so you don't want to talk about it? Did Leroy play a little too rough with you? And Nina's like, it's fine. And she says, you can admit it. He's a fucking prick. Like, I just got here, and I'm like, this guy sucks.
Yeah.
But of course, Nina's like offended. He's like, no, he's a genius. You don't know him like I do. And Lily's like, oh, someone's hot for teacher. Just try to like joke about anything. Yeah.
Any kind of like rapport with this person.
Yeah. And Nina stands to leave and, sort of storms out. That night, Nina tries to masturbate again in the bathtub, but it ain't working. And we see her sort of sink below the surface of the water. And when she looks up, there are drops of blood splashing in the water. And hunched over the tub is a nude, blurry-eyed, smeared makeup Lily. Mm. Or it's herself. And I think from now on, we're going to see a lot of like images of a woman's face. And it's like, is it Lily? Ooh. Is it Nina? Is it Beth? Is it her mother? Which yes. I loved. Like, So in this moment, it's like, is it Lily? Is it Nina herself? Either way, she sits up. Everything's fine. But then again, her cuticles and the skin of her fingernails are bleeding.
Ugh.
We see her check her scratches. It's even worse. It looks like, you know, goose flesh, raised bumps all over her shoulder. And she gets the nail scissors to try to clip her nails. Again, thinking maybe I'm scratching myself in my sleep.
Yeah.
And when she looks in the mirror, she sees herself. She has an evil grin. And she snips the skin on her finger. Her mother screams, what are you doing? But she says, everything's fine. Nothing's wrong. The next day, practice again.
But did she actually do that? Or is that what her reflection is like? Do it, do it. Or did she actually cut?
I think she did slip and cut her finger, but I don't think it was intentional. I think she was startled by her image and it made her cut herself. So, but again, I think we're to think like things are starting to blur between reality and sort of the fantasy in her mind.
Yes.
During practice, again, Tomas is disappointed, calls Nina and David, again, do it again. And then Tomas takes Nina aside and says, Lily told me that she saw you crying. And then she came and told me that I should take it easy on you. And of course, Nina's horrified. She's like, I didn't tell her to say anything. I wasn't complaining. I didn't say anything to her. And he says, well, maybe you need a day off, maybe even a month. But of course, we don't even have a month till the show opens.
Yes.
So basically, do you want me to bench you? And Nina says, she shouldn't have said anything. I'm totally fine. But Tomas says, you could be great, Nina. But you're weak. And you're weak because you're a coward. Ballet! After work, Nina yells. She storms into the green room where, like, the dance core is. And she yells at Lily. And it's like, stay the fuck out of my business. It kind of stands up for herself a little bit. And Lily says, okay, I didn't mean it like that. I said it in passing. I didn't tell him to, like, do anything. She's like, well, don't involve yourself. It's, like, a bit about you, you know? Lily's like, okay, I'm sorry. On the subway home, she's this guy across from her, like, mimes masturbating at her, and they're the only two people in the car. So he's just, like, really going to town. I know, that is New York. At home, again, her mom helps Nina fix her shoes for the next day, and she asks, has he tried anything with you? because he does have a reputation and I don't want you to make the same mistake I did. And Nina says, thanks a lot, Mom. Obviously, implying that Erica got pregnant, you know, when she was in her 20s as a dancer. And Erica says, I didn't mean that. I just meant my career. It's like, we get what you meant. Like, yeah. It's like, you know, I got pregnant with you and it ruined my career. And I don't want that to happen because you are me.
Life.
Yeah. And Nina says, what career? You're 28 and you're only in the dance corps. And her mom says, what? And her mom says, how's your skin? Take off your shirt and show me. And Nina says, no. And she finally says, like, I'm not taking my shirt. Just then the doorbell rings. Her mom goes to answer it, but then shuts it without inviting the person in. And Nina says, who was that? Mom says, it wasn't anybody. Nina rushes out, opens the door, and rushes in the hall. It's Lily. And Lily says, hey, I'm really sorry. I got your address from Susie in the office. I really am sorry for saying anything to Toma. I realized that was fucked up. I didn't mean like that, but I'd like to take you to dinner to apologize. So do you want to go out? And her mom, of course, is like, you can't come out. I have to examine your body and have to make you me. And I have to feed you cake and you're my baby forever. And anyway, so obviously Nina's like, yeah, we can get dinner, bitch. Yes, so she grabs her coat and her purse and she runs out. And her mom's like, you're on the stage tomorrow. Basically, like, dress rehearsal starting. We're getting into the final weeks of practice. And of course, she's like, I need one goddamn second that's not this house or being yelled at work.
Yeah. Please let me exhale.
And of course, at dinner, Lily is the confident, sexy version of Nina, like flirting with the waiter. Oh, like she gets a big slice. She gets a burger. But then when you see it, it's like a I don't know if it's like a pita or like an English muffin. Like it's not a full bun. I'm like, you needed the sexy bun. Like you needed the like glossy brioche bun. It's just a funny burger. Where it's like it looked like a burger you'd eat at like a restaurant in an airport.
You like had to.
Yes, exactly. I'm like, oh girl. But I'm sure at the time that was a cool burger and it was, I'm sure, like $25.
I'm sure.
And you know, so but Lily's like, you know, talking to her. She's like, okay, so spill the beans. How is Toma in bed? And Nina's like, I wouldn't know, and I don't want to talk about it. And Lily's like, girl, you need to relax. Listen, I am just joking around. No judgment. We're all adults here. She opens up her cigarette case and takes out Molly. And she takes one and then she goes to hand Nina a pill. And Nina's like, I don't know. I'm dancing tomorrow. I've never done it before. And she's like, it's only lasts a couple hours, but you don't have to. And she puts the pill back in her cigarette case. She says, but you do have to change that outfit because basically she's wearing her ballet top still, like her shrug. And there's so many talks of shrugs in this. Her mom's like, we have the gray shrug and the pig shrug. Just cover up your shoulders. Like, just be take a shrug with you. A lot of shrug work, and she gives her a black tank top. It's like, I always bring a going out top. Because it's like she already has a pair of panties and a going out top. And that's what living in New York was about. I will say
it
that.
It really was about having your full life for anything that could happen in your bag at all times.
Full face of makeup.
A toothbrush, an outfit, a different shoe.
Yes.
Lots of food. Things to do.
Her cell phone rings. Nina sees it's her mother. She ignores it. And she goes, she's like, I will at least put on the top. She goes back and Lily's flirting with these two guys at the bar. And she sees Lily drop the contents of the pill into her drink. Into Nina's drink. But when Nina comes over, she's like, okay, basically like, I saw you do that. So it's only a couple hours. She says, I promise you, I have to dance tomorrow. I wouldn't be telling you to take this if I knew I'm going to be fine. That being said, Lily seems like a party gal and it's also drinking. So like, you know what I mean? Like,
different thing.
Vibe. Yeah.
Yeah.
So they chat with these two guys. Lily keeps calling them Tom and Jerry. And the guy has to go, it's actually Andrew. She's like, right, Tom and Jerry. So dance with these two fucking duds. But then Nina starts rolling. And Lily says, we're going dancing. And they're going to a club, the fantasy of a New York club, where it's incredibly loud, incredibly dark, and just like neon lights flashing.
Yes.
And we have this great scene where like they're grabbing each other and it's sort of sexy, but they're also sort of like becoming each other. And like you can't tell who's who. We can't tell if it's two Ninas and two Lilies. Like they're sort of like blending with one another.
Right.
Nina comes to after a couple hours and she's making out with some random guy in the bathroom and she pushes him away. She can't find Lily. So she goes outside and Lily calls her from the door. They catch a cab back to Nina's place and they're both drunk and still rolling.
Yeah.
And as they ride, Lily like walks her hand over to Nina's lap and starts like rubbing her through her jeans, trying to get something going. And Nina takes her hand and removes it. And Lily just laughs like, oh, okay, we're not doing that. We get home and they're trying to stifle their laughter. I think the idea is like that Lily's going to sleep over just because it's so late. Of course, Nina's mother emerges from the shadows and chastises her, like, where have you been? You're drinking. What else are you doing? And Nina's like, well, you wouldn't know what else I'm doing. You won't know their names. But they were Tom and Jerry, and I fucked both of them. And her mom, like, grabs Nina's mouth and screams at her. And Nina and Lily run to Nina's room, and Nina blocks the door with a piece of wood. And her mom's trying to open the door and says, what is this? And Nina says, it's privacy. I'm not 12 years old anymore. And she jams the door shut, and she turns, she grabs Lily, and they start kissing. And they strip down, and Lily gets right to business. She yep. immediately pulls off Nina's underwear and starts going down on her. And there's this great, I think, effect where we sort of like see goose flesh sort of like run over Nina's body, yes. both because she's aroused and also like because she is becoming a swan. And of course, when Nina looks down between her legs, she sees herself staring up at her and like gasp. But when Lily sort of sits up and kisses her, it's Lily again.
Yes.
And we see Lily has on her back sort of stylized swan wings, or sort of wings coming out of her shoulder blades. We sort of the tattoo sort of flex and ripple. Mm-hmm. And Nina screams as she comes, as sort of like goose flesh rolls over her body. And when Lily sits up, she says, sweet girl. But when Nina looks at Lily, she sees herself, and she sees herself pushing a pillow down on her own face.
Okay.
In the morning, Nina wakes up hungover, alone in her bed and running late for rehearsal. She sees that the piece of wood has been moved, which makes sense because Lily obviously bounced at some point. Yeah. Nina grabs her stuff, and her mom is sitting like silently staring in the living room, and she says, why didn't you wake me up? I'm moving out. It's like, well, that's the best thing you could possibly do is move out,
yes,
obviously. Get a roommate.
Healthy.
Yeah. She makes it to practice only to see that Lily is practicing the Swan Queen role in her place.
Yes.
And Tama is mad at her for being late, and she says, go warm up. Of course, she's watching as Lily is crushing the dance. Everyone's loving. Again, it's like this natural sensuality. Again, yes. All the ballet looks the same, but she's doing a great job.
Yep.
After she's done warming up, Lily comes over to apologize. Like, I'm sorry, he just put me into practice. That's all it is. And Nina's like, why did you leave without waking me up? And Lily says, left? I didn't sleep over. Unless your name is Tom and you have a dick. And Nina's genuinely shocked. She's like, well, I thought we spent the night together. And Lily says, wait a minute. Did you have some kind of lesbian wet dream about me? You did, didn't you? You fantasized about me. And it's like, all right. Okay.
Okay.
I know it's 2012, but we can keep it moving. And also it is funny where it's like, sure, that is sort of like the traditional coding of lesbian sex in these kinds of movies.
Yes.
It's like an indication that you are losing your mind and becoming someone else. And is lesbian sex about losing your mind and becoming someone else? Sure, if you're doing it right, that's not usually a first date type of thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
But it is funny where it's like, dear God, I've gone insane and I had some kind of lesbian sex dream. It's like that you've
it's
already
all been, unraveling. Yeah.
Like you've already been ripping off your skin. You've like seeing different versions of yourself, the lesbian
right.
sex
you're
is...
stealing. Yeah, yeah. Like that's
yeah.
But this is the tipping point.
But it was very funny. And again, that now Nina is performing and Toma is bored. He's bored. Of course, at home, she goes to sort of to vomit, sort of like again, punishing herself. But of course, she has nothing in her stomach. She hasn't eaten. And she hears a weird sort of distorted laugh. And here, from here on in the movie, we're going to hear like women's voices, sort of the fluttering mm-hmm. of wings as she starts to lose it. She cranks her music box. But when it starts to play, she swipes it to the ground like a cat. And she starts going through her room and scooping up all of like her girlish things, all the stuffed animals, and goes and shoves them down the trash chute. Again, rejecting the childish things to become the woman that she needs to be to do this role. We're now in full rehearsal. We're on stage. Nina's in a tutu, and we see it. The set isn't fully constructed, so it's like black and white with this structure in the back, sort of a ramp that she has to run up. And at the end of the show, she runs up the structure and she flings herself off the back, off the cliff, and falls onto the mattress. And Toma is narrating, you look to the prince, and then you look to the audience, and then you jump. And she turns and she jumps. And it's kind of like, it's not that great, but Toma's encouraged. And Toma even gives her like a thumbs up, like okay, we're getting there. We're getting there. He says, everyone go get water before I'm going to give notes. She goes down to the seamstress, and the seamstress is like, oh, you've lost weight since I've taken you. And obviously she looks very gaunt.
Yeah.
And we see Nina sees her reflection, and she looks at her shoulder where the goose flesh is getting worse and the scratches are getting worse. And she sees in her reflection, the reflection is scratching her shoulder, but she's not. Yes. And again, it's just an illusion, but she sees it for just a second.
sort of unclear what she's seeing. The seamstress goes to like get some sort of a tape measure, and we hear Lily's voice. And the seamstress says, "So luckily, a little piece of keeping it moving along." She says, "Ah, yes, we need to get you measured for your Swan Queen costume." Again, I don't think that she would have said it like that.
Nope.
But Nina storms over to be like, "What the fuck?" And Lily says, "He made me your alternate just in case. That's all." Nina goes to confront Taman, says, "It can't be her. You pick anyone but her. Pick Veronica. She wants my role. I think she's trying to replace me." And again, I think of the doubling. It's like, I think that she's trying to become me. Meanwhile, it's like, girl, you were stealing all the best shit. That's you. You're projecting, you know? And Taman says, "Look, I know this has been a struggle, but this morning, that was a real breakthrough for you. I've never seen you like that. That was incredible. Tomorrow is the opening night. It is yours."
Wow, we got there fast.
Yeah. He says, "Give the performance I know you have in you, and you won't have to worry about Lily or anyone else, and I know you could do it." And she's like, okay. So, of course, she goes and she practices for hours and hours in the primary studio. Until finally, the piano player stops, and she looks at him. She's like, he says, "Look, I got a life." And he says to her, "Don't work too hard. It's your big day tomorrow." Basically, like, bitch, you can't be practicing until all hours of night. Tomorrow is the actual performance.
Right. You have to rest. You have to, like, kind of, like, focus and regroup. It can't just be running it into the ground.
Yeah. And also, shout out to that actor. His name is John Epperstein. The character's name is Jaded Piano Player. And it's a very, he's like, "Look, I got a life, girl," which I thought was fun. But, of course, now alone, we see her spinning and spinning, doing her turns. And when she stops, the image sort of lags. So, like, she stops looking in the mirror, and the image keeps turning, but then stops. Mm-hmm. The lights turn off, and we hear a woman's laughter. And she starts shouting, sort of like, "Can someone turn the lights back on?" And we see behind her, the image in the mirror turns to stare at the back of Nina's head. She runs out, trying to sort of find someone to turn the lights on. And instead, she finds Lily stripping down and making out with Toma. And Toma's animalistic, making all these like sort of bird noises. When Lily looks up at Nina, she is Nina. And when Toma turns to Nina, he is transformed into the black swan man, the monstrous swan that we saw at the beginning, the beaked black face, the feathered coat. Nina runs in a panic and runs all the way to Beth's hospital room, where she finds Beth sort of slumped over in a wheelchair and presumes that she's asleep. And we see her leave a little letter that says, "Beth." And we see her leave all the stuff that she's stolen from Beth's dressing room. The lipstick, the earrings, the pack of cigarette, the perfume, and a nail file.
Yes.
And Beth wakes up to be like, "What the hell's going on? You stole my things?" And Nina says, "I was just trying to be perfect like you." And Beth laughs and says, "I'm not perfect. I'm nothing." Uh-oh. Allison, Beth grabs the nail file and starts stabbing herself in the face, screaming, "Nothing! Nothing! Nothing!" And when she turns to Nina, we, of course, see that she is Nina. This, of course, causes Nina to fly into a panic. She runs to the elevator. But when Nina goes to press the button, she looks down and she realizes that she's holding the nail file in her hand. And it's covered in blood. Allison, who will survive this film?
Who will survive?
I think everyone except for Nina survives. Maybe doesn't make it through whatever this was, but I think she's the opposite of a final girl.
Yeah. Our last girl, our perfect swan.
Perfect swan.
Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime is so delicious, so unbelievable, no word exists to describe it. It's better than mind-blowing, it's mouth-blowing. Bright, citrusy, and spicy, this newest flavor from Captain Morgan is a balanced blend of sweetness with delicious notes of lime and slightly spicy chili flavor that is great for an escape outdoors with your crew or your next hangout. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime is best enjoyed as an ice-cold shot or as a chili lime twist on a classic as a spicy daiquiri. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime, a touch of sweet, a kick of heat. Please drink responsibly. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime, premium Caribbean rum with natural flavors, 35% alcohol by volume, Captain Morgan Rum Co., New York, New York.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Nina runs home and she runs to wash her bloody hands at the kitchen sink. And when she turns off the light, she hears the word "sweet girl" And when she flicks them on, she sees a blood-soaked Beth in the corner. And then from here on out, it's like, the woman could be Beth, it could be Nina, it could be Mother, it could be herself. Like,
it's anyone.
Yeah, it's anyone. All of them have dark hair. Nina screams. She runs to the bathroom to vomit. And she hears her mother sobbing. And she calls out, Mommy? And she runs to her mother's room and flicks on the light, only to see all of the paintings of her calling, Mommy, Mommy, sweet girl, talking to her in this cacophony. And her mother confronts her. Nina runs to her room, blocking the door with a piece of wood, and she screams, and we see her back rippling. It's sort of like, it's not just the flesh that's changing, it's the bones, it's the muscle.
Yeah.
And she sort of tried to, her mom keeps jamming her hand in the door, and we see Nina's eyes go blood red. And she looks and she sees that there are black feathers poking through the goose flesh on her shoulder. Ugh. And she pulls one of the feathers out, and Nina crushes her mom's hand in the door while her mother is screaming. Suddenly, Nina's knees snap backwards, bird-like, and she collapses to the ground, her head striking the bed frame, knocking her out. Nina wakes up in the morning in bed, and her mother is sitting in the armchair and leaps up. And Nina sees that her hands are covered in socks to keep her from scratching herself.
Nina's hands are.
Erica tells her daughter, I called the theater and told them you aren't feeling well. Don't worry. They could put someone on instead. Nina, of course, freaks out.
That's the worst news.
Nina runs to the door, and her mother has taken the doorknob off the inside of the door. And she starts basically slapping her mother around, trying to get the doorknob from her. And her mother screams, what happened to my sweet girl? And Nina says, she's gone. And she gets the doorknob and opens the door. And her mother's begging her, like, what is this? What's wrong? And she says, what's wrong? I'm the Swan Queen. And you're the one who never left the core. Nina shows up at the venue. And Lily is basically already in costume, good to go. And Lily's like, what is she doing here? I'm sorry, she was supposed to be sick. Somebody told me she was sick. Nina goes to get ready, and Toma follows her. He says, look, I'm sorry, I already told Lily that she could dance the part. Nina says, did you already announce it? Well, after Beth, you really need another controversy. And she starts putting on the makeup. And Toma loves this because it's like a whole other side of her. And he's like,
this is the black swan he's been waiting for this entire time.
Exactly. It's like, ah, the fucking bitch. And of course, he's giving her himself all the credit. Like, see, I molded you. I unleashed this dark side of you. I did it. I am the genius. And he says, look, tonight, the only one holding you back is you. Let her go. This is your moment. Ballet! And he leaves and she gets dressed in like the white swan. So it's like a white feathered costume and tutu.
Yes.
Black makeup, but like sort of a white, delicate feathered headdress and a white powdered face. We see when she takes off her shoes to put on her her toe shoes that her toes are starting to fuse together into a webbed foot. Swan-like. And she has to pry them apart. But again, it doesn't faze her because it's not as it's not any more gross than what's been going on. So it's like as her body started transforming, it's like, well, she's already sort of committed her body to ballet. So it doesn't strike her as it's not hitting her, right? And finally, it's time for her to dance. She goes as a white swan. As we knew she would, she crushes it. She's beautiful. The audience is loving it. The dance corps runs in and she sees herself amidst the dancers. She sees Lily. She sees herself. Tomas, you know, in the corner watching her, catches her eye, smiles like, excellent. This was a great first act. She sees David, her, you know, the dancer, and Lily kissing in the wings. And Lily grabs his dick, and that sort of like activates her. And we see the evil black swan man enter, and he says, hey, because he's just like a performer, which is very
guy.
Funny.
Yeah. He's like, I'm at work.
Yeah. Like, hey, girl. See you on stage. Nina goes back on stage and David lifts her over her head, but then she sees Lily in the dance corps and herself, and she starts panicking and she twists in David's arm and he drops her, dropping her to the ground. He says, what the fuck is going on? She recovers. They dance on, even as an evil feminine laughter starts filling the performance hall. She dances, and when the act ends, she leaves the stage and she's sobbing. All the other dancers go to her thinking, you know, concerned, are you okay? The audience is murmuring about the fact that she fell, and she runs back to her dressing room to change into the black swan character, into the costume. And Lily is there, already in costume, already with the makeup on. And she's like, get the fuck out of here. Lily says, I'm worried you aren't up for it. How about you let me dance the black swan? It's my turn. Allison, Nina grabs Lily and slams her into the full-length mirror over and over again, shattering it, screaming, it's my turn! Lily turns on Nina and begins strangling her. So Lily's on the ground and she's strangling Nina and says, no, it's my turn. And Nina reaches over and grabs a shard of glass and stabs it. And when she stabs it into the other, she is stabbing herself.
Yes.
She's stabbing another Nina, the Black Swan Nina. And of course, as soon as she stabs her, she turns back into Lily. And blood drips out of her mouth. Allison, Lily is dead. She has killed her. And now she has to hide the body in the middle of this ballet that she is the star of.
It's like she's busy.
Yeah, she's fucked too, because she drags the body over to the bathroom, but it's not like she has time to do anything. There's broken glass and blood everywhere.
Right.
And we see her look into the mirror and her eyes darken. She is the Black Swan now. So she has taken on this darker energy. She goes to the stage with David and she's a totally different performer, right? She is, it is funny, like her idea of like what sexiness is, it's like she's completely insane, you know, like
yes.
A guy whipping around. You know,
sexy being murderous and crazy.
Exactly. But after their first dance of this act, he's like, that was incredible. The audience is applauding. She's doing beautifully. And we see her go back on stage and she turns and she's spinning and her arms start to sprout black wings. And we're seeing her wings are unfurling and she's covered in them. And finally, we see from the audience's perspective, she hits the final pose and it's her. But then her shadow behind her has wings, which is a great effect if they were to pull that off. Yes. And the audience is applying. Oh, she's incredible. She's perfect. She runs off stage. And she grabs Tomas's face and kisses him in front of everybody. And he's delighted. Of course, he's like, oh, yes, my God. Like, look what I've done. Look it what worked. I unleashed. It worked. And she runs back on stage. People are already throwing flowers, but they have finally the last set piece, the last dance. And she runs down to the they have like a 15-minute set change where they like put up that final cliff that she has to jump off of. And she runs down to her green room to check on the corpse. Allison, she sees blood dripping under the bathroom door and she uses a pink towel to try to cover it. It's like, sure, girl.
Yeah, whatever.
Allison, there's a knock on the door. And when she opens it, it's Lily, very much alive. And Lily says, I'm really sorry about earlier. He did tell me I could dance it. And I was disappointed, but bitch, you are crushing it. I will let you finish it, but I just want to tell you, you blew me away. Like, you are incredible at this. Okay, I'll see you on stage. And then runs off. Unfortunately, then Nina says, so who's the corpse? Who corpse? Of course, she opens the bathroom door. There's no body. And she looks down and realizes that she has, in fact, stabbed herself. And now that she has changed into the white swan costume, she sees the blood is seeping through slowly through her. But the show must go on, Allison.
You got to finish it.
And she reaches down and pulls a piece of broken glass from the wound in her abdomen.
Ugh.
And she sobs as she reapplies the white swan makeup and she smiles in the mirror. And finally, we see her dancing. The dance corps comes out. It's the final number. The corps flying around her. We hear the flutter of wings around her. The Black Swan man lifts her over his head, puts her down, and she runs up the structure at the back of the stage to make her final leap. And we see her standing on top on point, and we see the blood soaking through her costume. She locks eyes with her mother in the audience, and they both stare at her, like mouths agape. I think with like realization, like they're finally seeing each other. The mother seeing what she has become, understanding.
What I have done, what we have done. Yeah.
And Nina leaps off the back of the stage onto the mattress, and everyone runs to her as the audience cheers and applauds. She was incredible. And Tomas runs over and he hovers over. He says, my little princess, I always knew you had it in you. Unfortunately, when he stands, Lily looks down and gasps, and Nina's abdomen is soaked with blood. And Tomas screams for help and says, what did you do? What did you do to yourself? And Nina says,
what? Perfect.
And then finally she looks up into the spotlight and the light overtakes her. The Black Swan.
Wow.
Hooray, so, ballet.
So much I remembered, and then also so much that I did not. So
yes.
Perfect.
Good. I'm so glad. It really held up. I really like this.
Yeah.
It's a, you know, it's a tip of the hat to the giallo genre. I like the New York of it all.
Yeah.
Allison, what are some fatal mistakes you think may have been made in Black Swan?
Fatal mistakes.
I mean, on the part of her mother, trying to raise a mini me to fix all of the things you felt wrong in your life and controlling them to the point that it drives them to insanity, would be a big one. Also for me, like, just like the pursuit of perfection and like impossible not to fall into that pursuit in something as rigorous as ballet, like where perfection is such a huge piece of its success.
Yeah.
And not having any friends.
Yeah. Big time.
I think if she had had like a real friend or like anyone outside of her like little closed world to be like, I'm losing my grip on reality. My mother is insane. My instructor is like a grooming nightmare, even though I'm in my 20s. Like, you know, if anybody could be like a lifeline for her, and Lily was trying to be, I think, but she could, it was too late.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think that the whole thing, I guess, is the mistake. I don't know if ballet is a mistake. I think ballet traditionally as it exists is a mistake. So I would say all the mistakes were made before she was born. Does that make sense?
Yes, yes, yes.
And then finally, where would you place A Black Swan on the spooky scale?
A spooky scale.
I think this is a 5 for me. I think the like body horror of it is really like visceral and affecting. And once you can tell like that she has no idea like what reality is, and you're seeing and hearing kind of reflections and a chorus around her of women that are her, it is, I remember it being very upsetting to see. But also it's like compelling and thrilling in a way that like makes it less scary for me because I'm invested and I'm not like, help, I can't watch this. So I think like it's a 5 in the, but like a 10 for, for movies I think are good. What about you?
Absolutely. I feel the same way. I feel like it is really, it's a thriller, right? I feel like there are definitely some scary moments. All the body horror is scary. All the moments where like she's alone in the studio, I thought were kind of startling, at least as I recall the first time I saw this. But yeah, I'm going to give it a 6. I'm going to give it a 6 on the spooky scale.
Okay, yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much everyone for listening. We really appreciate it. And until next time, good for her.
Please.
And also,
good for her.
Please keep it spooky. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Ruin Podcast, or join us at patreon.com/ruinpodcast for exclusive episodes and video content. Ruin is a Radio Point production with executive producers Alex Bach, Sabrina Fonfetter, Dan Powell, and Houston Snyder.
Recorded and edited by Sage Spielman.
Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime is so delicious, so unbelievable, no word exists to describe it. It's better than mind-blowing, it's mouth-blowing. Bright, citrusy, and spicy, this newest flavor from Captain Morgan is a balanced blend of sweetness with delicious notes of lime and slightly spicy chili flavor that is great for an escape outdoors with your crew or your next hangout. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime is best enjoyed as an ice-cold shot or as a chili lime twist on a classic as a spicy daiquiri. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime, a touch of sweet, a kick of heat. Please drink responsibly. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime, premium Caribbean rum with natural flavors, 35% alcohol by volume, Captain Morgan Rum Co., New York, New York.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Did you know that many products for pregnant women do not have their own clinical trials for safety or efficacy? That's because pregnant women are often excluded from clinical studies. Ritual is aiming to set a new standard with their essential prenatal multivitamin. It's the number one best-selling prenatal and the only leading prenatal backed by its own human clinical trial. Essential Prenatal is proven to deliver key nutrients, including folate, biotin, and vitamin D during pregnancy. Moms taking Essential Prenatal had a lower overall cortisol level during pregnancy than those taking a leading prenatal. Plus, it's designed to be gentle on the stomach. Ritual doesn't just have your back. They have the receipts. Get 25% off at ritual.com/clinical. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.